Hi, I'm Dr. Elizabeth Sanders, a foot and ankle surgeon and assistant professor at Boston University Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Katrina Sanders. I'm a registered dental hygienist, consultant, international speaker, and wine lover.
And we're sisters. I grew up looking up to my big sister, Katrina.
And now I look up to my lady boss, physician sister, Elizabeth.
Together, we are working to unite the dental and medical communities in unique and exciting ways.
Welcome to Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, our monthly podcast,
where we unpack all things health related from your mouth to your toes.
So grab your flossy flops
and slide on some flippy floppies
and let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with your favorite gingers, the Sanders Gingers. Hello, everybody.
I love that.
And hi, Dr. E. How are you? Are you good?
I am so, so good. I had a great day. How about you?
I'm good. I'm just, you know, wheeling and dealing and flossing and doing all the
cleaning
things,
those,
you know?
Teeth.
Yes, so good. And I'm so excited. Happy June to you.
Happy June.
I don't know if our listeners at home know this or not, but fun fact about the month of June, June is Family Health and Fitness Month.
What a great month to celebrate that. I love it.
And what a great gathering of humans to celebrate your health, wellness, and vitality
just
with.
Just my favorite
humans.
Which
is so exciting. I know. So amazing. So we have a super fun surprise for our listeners. Are you guys ready for this super fun surprise? Drum roll, please. We are bringing onto the show our little brother.
Yay, baby
Robert
brother!
Sanders.
Hey, what? Can I talk now? Can I talk now?
Hi, Robert.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
We're Thank so excited you. To have you. This is amazing. So we've got Robert on here. And you know what you're all thinking? Why do you have tech support on your...
I was about to say, that's what you know me as. And I'm pretty sure that's what your viewers know me as.
That's right.
Thanks for setting this up for us, by the way.
In all reality, he's a wildly successful software engineer. He's literally traveled like internationally speaking on big data, and he's extremely respected in his profession. But to me, he's tech support because when my printer does not communicate with my computer, I call him and somehow he figures it out. So to
True
me,
story.
He's tech support. But on today's episode, he is going to be our fitness expert. Before we really dive into the episode, Robert, will you tell our listeners about who you are and why we're having you on the podcast to talk about fitness?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Robert. My day job is as a data engineer. I work for a company called EXL Services at the moment. And I've been doing big data development, as my sister has talked about, for the past 12 years or so. But on the side and over the weekends, I am a triathlete and marathon runner and endurance athlete, as I like to call myself. So I've been doing that for about probably ever since I was 6 years old in some way, shape or form, doing some form of running and activities. So, yeah, been doing that ever since. And just after college, ended up really getting into endurance sports and marathons and triathlons. So been doing that and really enjoying it.
Yeah. I love that. Now I've had the privilege of knowing you your whole life. And you know, throughout your life, there've certainly been ebbs and flows to, you know, your physical activity, your fitness, the things you've been doing. Talk to us a little bit about, because you weren't running marathons at 6 years old. Like, how did this journey progress for you? Like, I remember you being like, 5 years old, running around on the soccer field. You weren't really running; like you were mostly on the field most of the time. Like you
slide
were,
tackling.
slide tackling. Is that what they do in soccer?
I only did that for 1 year.
How did this evolve for you? Like, where did this process come out? Where all of a sudden you're like, because you didn't just wake up one morning and think like, I'm just going to be a triathlete. Like there's a lot absolutely. That goes into that. So what was that journey like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, from 6 years old, I was involved in sports, and I always saw myself as somebody who would never really run recreationally or really just like on its own. I always wanted to have that involved in some sport and some sporting event that I'm also applying other things and other strategies to employ. So I did that for, oh man, must've been ever since I got into like high school. And then at a certain point I had done that for, you know, for quite some time, almost 10 years. And at a certain point, I kind of got a little bored of soccer, to be honest. I still loved it, but it was just, you know, I wanted to try something new. And I was at that point in my high school career where I wanted to try something else. And I knew I was really good at running because I was usually one of the faster kids on the field. I was very fortunate. So I decided, you know what, for my senior year of high school, I'll try track. So I ended up doing track, ended up running the 4x800. I ended up really loving it. Like I'm so used to being a part of a team sport, and true, the 4x800 is a team sport, because you have, you know, three other people on a team that basically do two circuits around a track.
They're basically running in a circle.
Like basically we're running really in a circle.
Okay. I want to make sure I understand this.
Yeah, exactly. Zero change in position, but exactly.
There's no defensive tackle or anything.
No. Way trying to stop
just the hurdles.
Although that would be interesting to employ. Like,
can you imagine like tackle running? I think it's called rugby.
I'm pretty sure it's called rugby, I was about to say. But ended up doing that. And one thing that was just so fun about it, at least for me, was I just saw a constant improvement in my times. Like I went from, you know, going 200 meters, 800 meters in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds down to about 2 minutes and 4 seconds over the course of the entire, year and season. Mm-hmm. So like that progression just really stuck with me. And I just started to love it. In college, I didn't run track. I decided I wanted to focus on my studies, but I still ended up running because I wanted a stress relief and a way to stave off that freshman 15 or freshman 10, mm-hmm. whatever people call it. Mm-hmm. So pretty much stuck with that until like over the course of high school, over the course of my, my college, career. And then even afterward, at a certain point, I needed something, I was doing really well professionally, but I didn't really have a lot going on in my personal life because that's just what happens when you're focused on your career, you don't really do all that much personally. So I needed something to help drive me personally and something that I could give fulfillment in my personal life. And I can't remember where it came from, to be honest, but something just clicked and I was like, you know what? I want to run a marathon, and ended up starting to train for marathons right then and there. I started out slow, just 5Ks, you know, ran a few of those, then trained for some 10Ks.
I like how he said just 5Ks. Like yeah, I run a 5K and I'm like,
come on, only 3.1 miles. Come on, it's not that
and
bad.
Katrina runs the 5Ks where it's like there's the winery at the end. And that's her motivation.
Yeah, I know it's at that finish line.
Yeah, she's walking in the very beginning and then sprints to the end.
I'm sprinting at the end. That's right.
She sees the winery and sees
those
the
are
wine.
The best. Yeah,
exactly. And then yeah, I got super into just running in general. As far as how I got into triathlon, well, that happened when one day I got injured because I was just running too frequently, ended up with a stress fracture on my tibia. Elizabeth was actually very helpful with that one. And was like, yeah, you need to stop running. So stopped running for the mandatory 6 to 8 weeks. And then I got to a point where, you know what, you could do some light cycling as a way of just getting back into physical fitness. And by then I was actually like endorphin addict, if you will, like, you know,
that runner's high.
Mm-hmm. So I needed that back. So I just, so I decided to do some cycling. And, you know, once I got into cycling, I realized, hey, I'm just a stone throw away from doing a triathlon because all I need is a swim. So
that's like the hardest part is the swim. You know, like,
but it was the hardest. That is true.
It was the hardest. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not the strongest swimmer, but I'm also not the weakest. So I got super into like watching some triathletes, YouTube TV, YouTube videos, and got into that whole sport. So I decided I'm going to start doing that as well. So I've been doing triathlon and marathons since.
Oh, that's amazing. It's so awesome. And I actually got to witness you crossing the finish line at your first triathlon, which was like,
yeah.
I will say, you know, it's incredible to see the amount of physical and mental endurance that is required for a triathlon. And you can see the fatigue on these athletes' faces. You know, they've been training for this. They've been training for this. And I will say, like, I got pretty choked up at the finish line because it, you just see this beautiful sense of like achievement and accomplishment that comes from something like that. You said something though, Robert, that I want to acknowledge. And because we do have a lot of listeners that are, you know, medical and dental professionals, you said that you were so focused professionally that you weren't necessarily focusing on that outlet, that thing. And I love that you also brought up that runner's high, that kind of endorphin drip, so to speak. I think, you know, the three of us on this pod absolutely experience that. We're all endorphin junkies. Like if I don't work out after, you know, 36 hours, I feel like my muscles are like atrophying. Like it drives me crazy. I have to get out. I have to feel that endorphin rush. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of the things that we think about a lot when we're, you know, putting off working out because we're so busy and we're so focused on this and we're so focused on that. One thing that I found when I started, and I will say this is going to be my theme for the podcast episode, is find what level of fitness and activity you love, because you're going to hear like Robert loves to run. Elizabeth loves to run. Like Elizabeth, you're a runner. Like you run all the time. I am not a runner. Like I just can't do it, but I'm an avid jazzerciser. And so find the thing that you love and do that thing and challenge yourself in that thing, you know, working to diversify your workouts so that your body isn't plateauing, but find something that you enjoy. And if you don't love running, like it's okay. There's a whole group of us that don't love running, but we love doing high intensity cardio to popular music in neon. And so join us at Jazzercise if you want. But the idea being when you're working out, when you're getting that endorphin hit, I don't know about you, but I feel as though then when I go to work or I've got to like tackle this project or whatever, I'm more efficient.
100%.
That it's like absolutely. That it just rewires your brain. And there is some incredible data on it. But I want to first dive into why we're talking about fitness and why this fitness is so important. Some of these statistics are just incredibly staggering. 81% of adolescents around the globe are not sufficiently active. And I think we can, you know, certainly surmise that, you know, with this video game era, you know, sitting is the new smoking, they say that sedentary lifestyle, that certainly is aiding in a lot of that. Only 1/3 of children across the United States are physically active every day, which is, again, just like staggering to me. Don't you remember like as a kid, mom being like, go outside, go run around. Like
grandma. Absolutely. And we have our bicycles and we would just go and hang out with the kid down the street and, you know, but nowadays it's almost too dangerous, I guess, to send your kid out. So you're absolutely right. They sit at home and play video games.
Yes. That starts that foundational layer, which we're going to talk about later on. Because when we talk about family health and fitness, we do know that the foundational components of, you know, what you observe as a child as appropriate eating behaviors or appropriate physical activity behaviors, that does influence a lot. Mm-hmm. We see that starting to show up now in our adults. About 30% of US adults 20 or older are considered obese based on their BMI. Only about 53% of Americans meet the actual physical activity guidelines for aerobic activity. We know how critical aerobic activity is, particularly for cardiovascular health, lung health, oxygenating our beautiful organs. In 2018, a study found that 27.3% of Americans were completely inactive. And the United States is 46th on the list of nations around the world that are the most inactive. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, you know, when you travel to countries like European countries, Amsterdam is a really great example. You travel to some of these countries and it's like, they walk everywhere. They bike everywhere. You know, they are not, you know, sitting around and then driving everywhere. And so that inactivity certainly is a part of our lifestyle. It's a part of our transportation modalities. It's a part of how we're raised. What other facts do you have for us, Robert?
Yeah. So a few other facts that I've identified was the World Health Organization suggests that all adults between the ages of 18 and 64 years should have 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week. I wonder how many people actually do that.
So, and if you do the math, that comes to maybe about 20 minutes per day.
Yeah.
Which honestly is that, I mean, that's what they say is the recommendation. Right. And yeah. they talk about, I mean, we'll talk about what moderate exercise is categorized in, but like, as I'm sitting here right now, I've got a desk cycle.
Are you doing it?
I'm not doing it right now because I don't want this. It actually doesn't make too much of a sound, but I don't want the microphone picking it up. But actually, like, I like bike on it during meetings, and people don't even know that I'm biking on it. Like, you can't even see like my torso moving. Like, it's really cool. I like it.
That's great. But even else? That ball, right? That ball that you can sit on, that's really good for your posture.
Yeah. Stabilize your muscles. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
What else, Robert? What else do you know?
Some other stuff. 23% of gym members quit because they're not using it.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely lower than real. Mm-hmm.
There's probably a very high percentage of people that's not even really using their
100%. They're paying for it. They don't even know.
Yeah. They don't even know that they're still paying for it. It's like the Netflix bill. It just gets auto debited.
That $10 is just taking out of their account every week or whatever. another thing, 81% of millennials exercise or would like to compare to 61% of boomers, according to the Nielsen study, a Nielsen survey.
Yeah. And I like that. This is promising because what we're seeing is a trend where millennials are working to be more physically active mm-hmm. than the generation before them, or they would like to, you know what I mean? And I think that that's a really neat study that we're starting to see. We're seeing those trends where people are doing, you know, yoga, they are doing CrossFit, they're doing high intensity cardio, you know, all of those things. So I think that's really exciting.
I think there's also a much bigger emphasis. Like we joke about people not doing anything, but there is still a lot of, you know, news out there, a lot of studies, a lot of, you know, doctors and facilitators like pushing, like you need to be more active than maybe what they had told boomers in the past. So I can see that actually being the case, but maybe it's not necessarily gyms. It's just like different type of activities that they're doing.
But not only that, our education on nutrition as well, you know, and our access to different foods and organics and, you know, different fruits and vegetables. We just, our parents just weren't necessarily educated. You know, we came from an era where things were frozen or, you know, canned or, and they didn't necessarily know the implications of those types of products. You know, artificial sweeteners were just coming out of being made. So, and now we're being educated about it. And there are just so many more products available to us that are a lot more natural. You know, I have Whole Foods down the street. I have Trader Joe's and, you know, and we talk and we educate each other too. So very interesting.
You know, that's a really great segue. If you don't mind, I'd love to move into looking at what we know about family dietary habits, because you brought it up and this is really interesting. Do we all remember the food pyramid that we grew up with?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, we talked about this, you know, if you have not listened to our Nutrition Month episode, please zippity doodah on back to our Nutrition Month episode. You got to check it out. It's awesome. But, and obviously I'm biased because it's Elizabeth and I doing it. But we talk in there about some of the changes and the trends in nutrition. You know, when we grew up with this idea of you want 6 to 11 servings of carbohydrates. That was the bottom part of the pyramid. And so what did mom do? She's walking through the grocery store and she's seeing cereal boxes that are saying, you know, part of a healthy, balanced meal. And so, you know,
and we would eat our cereal and see that.
That's right.
And
our diets were so driven on that, right? Like, what do you guys remember that we primarily ate when we were kids? Like when we were like 6 to 10, what did we eat?
Robert loved chicken cordon bleu.
Oh, I love chicken cordon bleu. Hey, you gonna make that chicken cordon bleu?
Yeah. Frozen it from Sam's Club. Heck yeah, we're doing it, right?
Yeah, really a lot of cereal sandwiches, you know, because you were taught as a child from your teachers that you have to get that amount of whole grains into your body. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Robert, what did you eat at the cafeteria in school?
Pizza. That was one of the main things. Burgers and sandwiches. Like those are some of the main things.
Yeah. You know, when we grew up in this era, and it was, there were a lot of societal trends that were happening at the time, but one of those major dynamic societal trends is that we saw divorce on the rise. And so we saw single moms, you know, working to thrive. Not that that was not happening before our youth, but it just seemed very concentrated to the point where dietary nutrition food companies started to step in and say, there are some things that we can do to support. So they started to build out lines of convenience foods for the single working mom. And this is where we started to see trends around Pop-Tarts. This is where we saw Dungaroos, pizza, burgers, Uncrustables, these convenience foods that can be bought either frozen and stored or were, you know, non-perishable food items. That was going to be a heck of a lot easier for a busy mom. Now we're starting to see, of course, that those were not healthy habits. And so we're starting to see some unique trends now in the family dietary dynamic. The first is changing mealtimes. So the pandemic really did do a few decent things for society. And one of those is now families are sitting down together as a family and eating dinner. Do we all remember when like we would sit down as a family and remember when the phone would ring and mom would get so mad, don't answer, we're having family dinner, you know? And it was like, okay. But it was important to her that we have family dinner. And that, as convenience foods and fast food started to accelerate, we started to see the loss of that family dinner time. So now we're starting to reestablish that. Dr. E, you said it perfectly when you said we do have access to healthier food options now. Now we are aware. And so now we're looking at, you know, high fructose corn syrups, and we're looking at some of the artificial sweeteners in things. You know, we're looking for more organic options because now we're watching these documentaries on Netflix telling us that we need to be careful about organic foods and pesticides and growth hormone, growth factors, and things like that. So yes, we do have access to more healthy options. And I will say the convenience food items have shifted a little bit. So every millennial in the whole wide world shops at Trader Joe's. It's just what we do. That's like our mecca of quote unquote convenience, because it's everything just compacted into like one thing. So again, we're starting to see those trends, but yet they're offering healthier options for us. We're also looking at plant-based alternatives in many situations. And we're also looking at some of those food subscription services, you know, where the you can buy the those boxed meals and then cook that meal from scratch at home, which has really been an interesting dynamic. As we start to see some of these trends shift, we're starting to see that there are critical layers to how parents play a role in eating habits. And so there are a lot of really great, you know, suggestive articles out there. And I just wanted to highlight a few things that that they've shared as far as from a family dynamic, some of the things that a parent can do to encourage and better shape a child's eating habits. So the first is making a positive eating environment. These are things like having regular snack times and regular meal times that are consistent so that when, you know, your child is hungry, that it's like, oh, remember mom would always say like, well, we're having dinner will be ready in 45 minutes. You know, I mean, like we were consistent with that. And making sure that snacks are readily available. I remember Dale's mom, my boyfriend's mom was telling me the other day that she, because Dale's such a weird snacker. He doesn't snack on like candy and chips and stuff. He wants like carrots and ranch dip and like raisins, like a weirdo, like a psychopath. And so I'm like, so I asked his mom the other day, I'm like, where did that come from? And she's like, that's what he grew up snacking on. Like I had a snack drawer for him and he, whatever he wanted, he could eat as much as he wanted of it, but it was all healthy stuff. It was almonds. It was, you know, like just healthy food items. So thinking about your child's snacking habits, if you don't have it in the house, they can't snack on it. Eating together as a family away from the television is really critical. There's incredible amounts of data that show that children who eat meals with their family tend to eat healthier foods like fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, which we know lowers their risk of becoming overweight. Avoid pressuring your children to eat. This is a big one. You know, children like to be able to decide how much they want to eat based on how hungry they feel. And I will say that that was something that was not very popular as millennials growing up. We were told like, finish what's on your plate and then you can dismiss yourself. So, you know, we're starting to see now this trend of not necessarily pressuring your child to eat if they don't want to eat. Avoid using food as a reward or a punishment. I don't know if you remember, Elizabeth, but when you and I would go to the dentist, mom would take us to the McDonald's and we would get a Happy Meal. That was a reward. Now, there are now we're starting to see unhealthy adult behaviors that are associated, like in overeating, for example, when food was observed as a reward as a child. So now we're starting to see.
Just going
to
say, I got Tic Tacs after.
You did. Yeah. You liked the orange Tic Tacs.
You
like
got
a weirdo.
Happy. Yeah.
Like a weirdo.
You know, I liked the orange.
Yeah. It's so weird. And then, of course, making sure that you have healthy foods at home. Again, if you don't have unhealthy foods in the house, the kids can't eat them. In addition, kids are constantly watching what you're eating. So be a positive role model. You making healthy food choices, you limiting foods that are high in calories, high in fat, high in sugar, high in salt, are also really going to help. I think one of the biggest things, and I'll just admit, from moving from the Midwest down to Arizona, that I had to adjust was we grew up in a household where we had cans of pop constantly. Mom was buying cans of pop. And then moving down to Arizona, I really had to limit my pop intake because, you know, you're in the desert. You have to drink water. Like, you're dehydrating yourself if you're drinking pop. That was a really hard shift for me because foundationally I just grew up with this is just what you have in the house. Creating some of those healthy behaviors is a critical layer to establishing good habits as a family. So Dr. E, tell us a little bit about some of the other ways that as a family, we could all encourage each other to be a bit more fitness conscious.
Absolutely. And this is a fun topic because, like we talked about, this is Family Health and Fitness Month. So we're going to kind of focus on things that we can do together as a family. Not saying, Robert, that your triathlons and marathons aren't something that are really exciting.
I'm not interested in doing that with you, though. Not interested at all.
Are you sure?
No, I will sit on the sidelines with a white claw and cheer you on.
That's what I will do.
But that's a great example, Katrina, about how, you know, if one person in your family is big in that, you know, bring the other family members. You know, you can have your White Claw, the little kids can have their little juice boxes, Capri Suns, and you enjoy that together. One other thing would be to sign up for a 5K run or walk. You know, for those of you who love to run, usually Robert's like way ahead of me and then I come in and the rest of the family and whoever wants to run can run and whoever wants to walk can walk. So that's a great option.
I want to share, by the way, like one of my favorite 5K moments was when we did the 5K in Wisconsin.
The Capital City 5K.
The Capital City 5K. Yeah. And it was so amazing because Elizabeth and Robert ran up ahead and I was back with Dad and our other sister, Cassandra. And so it was so funny because Robert did the 5K. This was for the State of Wisconsin Organ and Tissue Donation Foundation. Robert did the 5K, won in his group or whatever, and then came back and like met us and then walked with us the rest of the way. Like, he was so far ahead that we were like, you know, only about a third into the walk. So it was just a really beautiful way for us as a family to be able to connect and enjoy something that was tethered to a cause as well, which I absolutely love.
I am so glad you mentioned that because that's really what these 5Ks are for, you know, and find something that can bring your family together about a cause. Other things that you can do, you know, because sometimes these 5Ks, they do come with a cost. Just go to the local park and go for a walk. You know, how often would we just grab the dog, put her in a wagon and then just go for a walk around the block, you know, go for a walk around the city and explore different parts that you've never seen before. Try the local YMCA, a health club or a gym. Many are actually hosting special events for Family Health and Fitness Day. So, you know, look into it. Maybe there's some good specials. Go on a bike ride together. Those are a lot of fun. One of my favorite bike rides was one we just had where we went on a bike ride all around Milwaukee. And it was great just exploring the city. That was one of my favorite days, I think, with you guys. And it's something that I'll cherish for forever. One thing, we were actually very good at this, building an obstacle course in your backyard. So, you know, there's no snow. So we used to do that as kids with snow all the time, but maybe building an obstacle course. We, have, of course, did a lot of it with our dogs, though, and kind of led them through. But that's one option. Try to find a local pool that you guys could go to together. So this is a little easier for me than it is for you guys, but go to the beach together. But then something that you guys could do in Arizona would be go for a hike. In the mountains. And you guys have some various mountains that are some that are more difficult than others, some that are a little easier. Go to, and this is great to talk about our nutrition aspect, go to a local farmer's market and walk around, purchase different vegetables, talk to people, meet new people, and then go home and make a dish together for dinner. So how great to, you know, spend time together and talk about nutrition. You could find a place and do indoor rock climbing. Mini golf, that's a really big thing. This is something we used to do too, play kickball, softball, or soccer together in your backyard. Yoga, that would be fun to do as well, you know. And by the way, yoga is no joke for anyone who's ever done it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's no joke.
We talked about cooking and eating together, which is an option. Okay, this is a really cute option. Plant a garden together. I mean, it's June, aww, right?
I love that.
And the weather's getting so nice. So planting a garden together and work on raising these plants together. It really builds you as a family too. And another really good humble option would be to feed the homeless together. So Robert, let's talk about some things that we could do that would be a month long challenge that I kind of want to do with you guys.
Okay.
You want to? Are we doing a contest in some of these?
Should we do mm-hmm. a contest?
I'm in. Let's do it.
Okay. I think we should.
Okay.
All right. Well, one
list
of them,
some ideas and let's select one.
Okay.
I'm nervous.
So one idea is a step count challenge, and I think there's a lot of different services. Like if you're using like a Garmin watch or an Apple or
so this is. That's a great option. However, I'm just going to tell you that I'm going to win. So
I was just going to say.
That's true. Yeah.
It's kind of annoying.
Although I think
some
I
of
asked...
us spend a lot of time on airplanes. That's not fair.
Elizabeth,
and
I'm
I
curious.
Walk 40 minutes to work.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Elizabeth, what is your average step count these days?
Probably about 20,000 a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then on the weekends, if I was to start this step challenge, I would just be walking all around the city and try to beat all of you. So that may not be fair.
Not like Cassandra when she put the Fitbit on the dog to try and get her steps. Our other sister, she cracks me up. She's like trying to get these steps on her little Fitbit. She put it on the dog.
Allegedly. Right.
What else?
Well, so you can also drink water, just water, throughout the entire month.
Why did you say just water and look at me?
I'm looking at my camera.
So we're not tracking the White Claws. We're just tracking how much water we drink in a day.
There's water in White Claw, right?
Yeah, there is.
It's seltzer water.
Yeah. There you go.
That I could do.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Another challenge, and this actually speaks to one thing that you talked about, Katrina, in the very beginning, which was find something that you like. Well, perhaps you can try a new activity. Mm. Elizabeth gave some great examples of some different types of activities that you can do, walking, swimming, playing softball, all these individual activities. Maybe try a different activity that you've never done before. Another example is like, it's something that I've done in the past and I've really enjoyed was join a pickup group or like I play Ultimate Frisbee every now and then with a pickup group that just meets up every Saturday. So that's another activity that you can try. Just they're free. Just go on one of those meetup group websites and mm-hmm. just find something local in your community.
That's great.
That's cool. I think we should do that. I think that should be our month-long challenge. In the month of June, each of us should try a new activity. Awesome. So make sure y'all follow me at The Dental Wine Genist on social media. I will post a photo of each of us doing our new activity So you guys can see that shakeout, which is so exciting. Before we wrap up, I know we've got a podiatric surgeon on here. So I'd love, Robert, Elizabeth, I'd love for you two to talk about shoe fitting. We know that based on the physical activity that you're doing, that shoes absolutely are important. Foot care is super important. Robert, you're probably putting a lot of different things on your foot, you know, during a triathlon. So walk us through some of the things that we need to know about shoe fitting and what is appropriate to wear. What are some of the do's and don'ts?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the main things that you can do when it comes to shoes, there's one is identify the right shoe for the activity that you're doing. You're right. With regard to triathlon, there's a lot of different types of footwear or lack thereof in the case of swimming. Actually, no, there's some swim shoes that you can put on in the event that it's cold or it's a beach start or something like that. So there's a lot of different things that you're putting on your feet and different types of terrain that you're ultimately running on. Various shoes are there for specific purposes. And I think we can have a whole conversation about what shoe is right for the various activity, but that's a general rule, is making sure that you're picking the right shoe for the activity that you're doing. Trail running, walking, or road running, you know, find the right shoe there. Another is, at least for me, what I found is breaking in the shoe or wearing it on a frequent basis. Of course, when you're at the store, put it on, try it out, mm-hmm. make sure that it fits, make sure that it feels comfortable. That's paramount. But then also starting to rotate that into your actual shoes that you're wearing on a regular mm-hmm. basis. What I like to do is whenever I get a new shoe, I don't wear it all the time whenever I'm running or doing training. I actually alternate. So I'll use a shoe that I've already broken in, and then I'm mixing in another shoe in order to break that in, because I've found instances where if I go all in on one set of shoes, all of a sudden my feet start to get just torn apart because it just hasn't been broken in. So to help alleviate that is basically just rotate it in. Still use your previous shoe, but just start to use a new shoe.
Those are all very, very good things. And I'll say in my fellowship, especially, I trained with a lot of athletes and worked with my boss who owns a running shoe store company. Just very interesting. I found that according to a 2018 study, only about 1 in 3 people are actually wearing the right shoe size. So it is really important. You know, we have a Brannick device where we actually measure people's feet. And it really is important. I was able to get a biomechanical evaluation done in a running shoe store. So I do highly recommend that you go to one, especially if you're like Robert and you're an athlete constantly running. It's very important that you find out what your shoe size is and what shoes are recommended to you. And I make recommendations on a daily basis. Because wearing an ill-fitting shoe, it really can affect your balance. And it can cause, of course, foot pain, but the foot bone is connected to the hip bone, is connected to the head bone. It can cause back pain and joint pain.
Isn't that a song from kids? Songs
or something? Exactly. From kids songs, right?
There it is. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So when you'll go to these running shoe store companies, again, if you come to me, because I'm trained in it, I can certainly recommend certain shoes to you based on your foot type. But what I'll do is I'll take a look at your foot type. Sometimes I order x-rays, I'll do a gait analysis, and then I'll make certain recommendations. For example, if you have a very flat foot, I'll recommend shoes with some support. If you have very high arches, like me, Katrina, and Robert, I usually recommend more of a neutral type of shoe. But again, all of it really depends on your foot type, what your goals are. And several pairs of shoes will be recommended. Make sure you try them on. You know, there are plenty of brands like Brooks, Asics, New Balance, Saucony, and you don't just want to go for which one looks cool or the name brand. All these name brands have their own, you know, different purposes, but everyone, you know, you could try one on and not like it and try one on another and totally fall in love. And just one other thing to add, that most people, if you are running, that most shoes, you should be using them for about 300 to 500 miles. You know, so people ask, how long should I be using my shoes? Usually people are getting about 400 miles out of one pair of shoes. So just to reiterate that.
Do you think that's where the song came from? Like, they were like, how many miles should you run in these shoes? And the guy was like, I would run 500 miles.
That's so great. Now the next time an athlete asks me, that's what I'm going to sing to them.
There you go.
Brilliant.
Well, I love this information. This is so fantastic. Thank you so much, family, for joining me. Stay tuned. Join us on social media to check out the new activity that each of us attempts in the month of June for Family Health and Fitness Month. I can't wait. I'm still trying to figure out and trying to plan what I'm going to do, but it's going to be great. And stay tuned for future episodes. We're super excited about actually next month's episode in July, where I will be doing a very new activity in very new shoes with my family. Stay tuned. We will tell you about what that is in the month of July. So with that, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, produced by Kristen Homan and brought to you by our friends at Modern Hygienist. Join us next time as we brush up on more oral systemic content.
We promise to keep you on your toes.
And from the Sanders family, always keep racing to perfection.
Thank you for joining us for another monthly episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters.
Thank you for being part of the change we need to see in the medical and dental professions.
Join us next month for another sister-to-sister chat about other unique, interesting, and perhaps provocative and disruptive health topics.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, and maybe even leave a fabulous review.
And we'll catch you next month for another episode of
Floss and Flip Flops
with the Sanders Sisters.
I love you, Kinka.
I love you, Izzy.